All right, get ready, because today we're going deep on innovation mentoring.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah, we're going to be looking at Bill Murray's Inquire to Inspire.
Okay.
This book is packed with insights about how to lead teams to success.
Mm-hmm.
But not by telling people what to do.
No.
But by asking the right questions.
I like that.
We're going to explore what it means to be a sponsor, like a mentor for innovation teams.
Right.
And we'll dig into those critical questions these sponsors should be asking.
Sounds good.
Basically, how to build a culture of learning and create value. And get this, one of the things Murray argues is that managing people can actually limit their potential.
Really?
It's mentoring that really helps people grow.
Mm.
By asking things like, what can you do? Or what will you require?
Instead of just giving orders, right?
Exactly.
That's a big shift.
So let's start with defining this idea of a sponsor. Okay. Murray kind of describes them as being similar to a product owner in agile methodology.
Like a mentor.
Probably like mentors than traditional managers, for sure.
Gotcha.
And one of the biggest things to being an effective sponsor is building trust.
Oh, for sure.
Right from the get-go. Showing the team that you're committed.
Mm.
It sets the tone for that whole working relationship.
Yeah, like you're in it together.
He even shares a story in the book about a coach who took personal risks to build trust.
Oh.
He showed his own vulnerability to the team.
Interesting.
Before asking for theirs.
I see.
Now, putting the team together.
Right.
Murray is all about keeping it small and cross-functional.
Oh, small teams.
Yeah. He calls it the two pizza team rule.
Two pizza team?
Yeah. The team should be small enough to be fed with two pizzas.
Makes sense. Easier to communicate.
He also says to look for specific roles and personalities within the team.
Oh, like what?
He outlines four key roles. The designer, the hacker, the hustler, and the visionary.
Got it.
Each one brings something unique to the table.
Yeah, different skills and perspectives, right?
Absolutely, but it's not just about skills. Murray also says to think about potential distractions, competencies, connections, and personality fit.
Makes sense. You want a team that can work well together.
Right. And they need to have the right expertise and networks to overcome the challenges.
Okay. So we've got our sponsor and our team.
Now let's talk about this idea of mentorship over management.
All right.
Murray really hammers home this point that managing limits people while mentoring helps them grow.
So instead of giving orders.
It's all about empowering teams by asking those insightful questions.
I like it.
Encouraging critical thinking instead of pushing for specific ideas.
Interesting.
He actually gives an example of a sales manager who became a sponsor.
Oh, cool.
And naturally had this mentoring style.
So he was already good at it.
It was interesting because this sales manager already had a habit of basing his assumptions on what his salespeople told him about the market.
Wow.
So he was already listening and supporting his team.
Yeah.
Which made him a really good sponsor.
That makes sense.
Now, here's where things get really interesting. Murray argues that the best sponsors are actually masters at asking the right questions.
Not giving all the answers.
Exactly. He introduces this concept of convergent and divergent questions.
Convergent and divergent.
These are powerful tools for guiding a team's thinking.
Okay. I'm intrigued.
What's really cool is how these questions can either expand or focus the conversation.
Oh, so they do different things.
Divergent questions broaden things. They encourage the team to explore all the possibilities.
I see.
While convergent questions help narrow the focus and drive toward a decision.
Interesting.
He gives some great examples of both effective and ineffective questions in the book.
Like what?
Okay, so a good divergent question might be, what other factors could be influencing this problem?
Okay.
While a bad one would sound more like, why haven't you considered this solution?
More like an order.
Right. It's about guiding, not dictating.
Yeah, I get it.
Let's talk about understanding the customer.
Okay.
Murray is very clear about this. The business itself is never the customer.
Even for internal problems.
Even then.
Huh.
It's all about remembering that there are real people behind every business problem.
Right.
With emotions and motivations.
We sometimes forget that.
He uses the example of tackling supplier delays.
Oh.
Instead of focusing on the impact to the business,
mm-hmm.
he encourages teams to identify the people directly affected.
Like the production managers.
Exactly. Or the receiving managers.
Yeah, they're the ones dealing with the consequences.
It's about refining that customer understanding.
To get to better solutions.
He also talks about the example of customers getting frustrated with online forms.
Been there.
It's about understanding the user's specific pain points.
So you can address the root cause.
Right, not just the symptoms.
Okay.
He even brings up the product adoption curve and the importance of understanding innovators and early adopters.
They can give valuable feedback.
Really valuable insights in the early stages.
Yeah.
And Murray reminds us that even failures can be valuable.
How so?
True failure is when you don't generate any usable data.
Hmm, interesting.
It's about embracing a learning mindset.
So negative results are okay?
They can be just as informative.
Mm-hmm.
He shares a story about a team that wanted to test sending text messages before customer service calls.
Interesting.
And the sponsor played a crucial role by clearing roadblocks and supporting their experiment.
Even though there was risk.
There was some risk involved.
I see.
That's a perfect example of how a sponsor creates a safe space for learning.
Which is so important for innovation.
Okay, now let's talk about generating insights.
Okay.
Murray defines these as actionable new beliefs that are derived from data analysis.
So it's not just about collecting data.
It's about what you do with it.
Right.
And what's really interesting is how he differentiates between strong insights.
The ones that lead to solutions.
And weak statements that offer no clear direction.
So there's a difference.
He gives clear examples to illustrate this point.
Like what?
A strong insight might be something like, customers are abandoning their online shopping carts because they're worried about shipping costs.
Okay, that makes sense.
A weak statement would be, customers don't like our checkout process.
You don't know why they don't like it?
Exactly. It's about understanding the reasons behind customer behavior.
I get it.
And Murray emphasizes that insight should be based on real-world experiments and customer feedback.
Not just assumptions.
Not just opinions.
Got it.
He tells a great story about a team that learned their product couldn't actually address the emotional and physical needs of their target customer.
Oh, wow.
That shows how important it is to test your assumptions.
And be willing to adapt.
Okay, so now let's talk about scaling.
Scaling.
This is about transitioning a product from the initial innovation phase.
To wider implementation.
Exactly.
That's a big jump.
It is, and it means thinking about viability, feasibility, and market fit.
Which are all critical.
Murray discusses using tools like the Lean Canvas and Business Model Canvas.
I've heard of those.
They're great for visualizing and testing assumptions.
At different stages.
He also points out the challenges of bringing in new resources during scaling.
Like new team members.
Right, subject matter experts or apprentices.
Yeah.
Integrating them into a team that already has its own way of working.
It can be tough.
Murray shares a story about a team that ran into internal conflicts during this process.
Oh, really?
It emphasizes how important clear communication and strong sponsor support are.
Yeah.
To navigate those challenges.
Makes sense.
And a big question that comes up during scaling is about transferring ownership of the project.
To another team.
For final development and implementation.
That can be a tough decision.
For teams that have put so much time and energy into it.
Yeah.
But it's important to consider the skills and resources needed.
For successful implementation.
Murray really stresses the importance of handling this transition carefully.
With clear communication.
And realistic expectations.
For everyone.
He also emphasizes involving the team in choosing their next challenge.
Well, that's interesting.
It keeps them engaged.
Aligning their values with the organization's needs.
Promoting continuous learning and growth.
I like that.
And this is where it gets really interesting. Murray doesn't just leave you hanging with these concepts.
He gives you tools.
He outlines 20 key questions.
20.
That sponsors should be asking.
Wow.
Throughout the innovation journey.
So it's like a roadmap.
A cheat sheet for unlocking innovation.
I love it. Yeah, 20 key questions that sponsors should be asking throughout that whole innovation journey.
Nice.
Each one is designed to spark deeper thinking, uncover assumptions, and ultimately lead those teams towards success.
I like it. So it's like a cheat sheet for unlocking innovation.
You got it.
That's cool.
And he doesn't just like list them randomly.
Oh.
They're organized to match the stages of the innovation process.
So there are questions for different parts of the process.
Exactly. There are questions for defining the problem, understanding the customer.
Testing assumptions.
Yeah. And so on.
I like that. So practical.
It's like having a guidebook for innovation mentoring.
Okay, so let's dive into some of these questions.
Okay, the first one Murray asks is, what problem are we here to solve?
Seems pretty basic.
It sounds simple, right?
Yeah.
But it's so crucial to make sure everyone understands the problem the same way.
Oh, I see. You're all on the same page.
Exactly. Murray really emphasizes that problems aren't defined by the lack of a specific solution, but by the customer's pains, passions, and jobs to be done.
So you're really focusing on the human element.
Yes, exactly.
I like that.
He even suggests initially thinking about the problem without focusing on a specific customer.
Really?
Yeah, this helps avoid narrowing the scope too early
Oh, so you don't miss out on anything.
and potentially missing out on valuable insights.
Can you give me an example?
Okay, so he uses the example of water pollution.
Right.
Instead of framing it as a problem for just specific individuals, he suggests defining it more broadly. Something like, water pollution adds uncertainty to the consumption of water, increasing the risk of social, economic, and biological disruptions.
So it impacts everyone.
Right. This opens up the possibility of solutions that benefit a much wider range of people
Wow, that's cool.
and
So
systems.
you zoom out to see the whole picture before
Exactly.
focusing on the details.
He also provides additional prompts to guide the team's thinking.
Like what?
Things like, why is this problem significant, and what other problems were considered, and how might they be relevant?
So you're really getting a good understanding of the problem. All
Exactly.
right.
And he specifically cautions against asking premature questions about timelines, solutions, or the size of the opportunity.
Gotcha. Those come later.
Those are all important,
Yeah.
but not until you have a deep understanding of the problem and the customer.
Makes sense. What's the next key question?
The next one focuses on the customer.
Right.
It's who is your customer?
All right.
And again, he's very clear that the business is never the customer.
We talked about that.
Even when you're solving internal problems,
Right.
it's so important to
So,
remember that even when addressing a business problem, like an inefficient process or something, the focus should be on the people whose lives are directly impacted.
So, like with those supplier delays
Yeah, exactly.
we were talking about.
He says the true customers in that scenario are the production managers and receiving
The
managers.
ones actually dealing with it.
They are dealing with the immediate consequences of those delays.
So you're not just looking at the big picture, you're thinking about how it affects individual people.
Exactly.
That's really cool.
And he provides some really helpful questions to guide this.
But like what?
For example, whose life improves if we solve this problem? And who can we observe and ask about the impact of this problem?
Wow, I like those. They really make you think deeper.
Yeah, they get the team thinking beyond the obvious. He also encourages teams to look beyond just the most obvious customers.
Because there might be others involved.
Yeah.
Yeah, there might be other stakeholders or influencers who could offer valuable insights or even become early adopters of a solution.
I see. So keep your eyes open.
Yeah, it's so easy to get tunnel vision when you're deep into a problem.
For sure.
Okay, so once the team has a good grasp of the problem and the customer,
Yeah.
Murray's next question is, what is your theory of customer value?
Ooh, interesting.
This is where they start connecting the dots between the problem and potential solutions.
So it's like brainstorming,
It is like brainstorming.
but more focus.
Much more focused. It's not just throwing ideas around. It's about really understanding what the customer values.
And how a solution can deliver that value.
Yeah, in a way that's meaningful to them.
I see.
So how do you actually go about figuring that out?
Yeah, how do you do that?
Murray emphasizes spending time with customers, observing their behaviors, understanding their motivations.
So really getting to know them.
He even brings up the product adoption curve again, the
Right.
importance of identifying and engaging with those innovators and early adopters
To get their feedback.
to get their feedback early on.
It's interesting that he differentiates between wants and needs.
Yeah, it's really important.
Because sometimes they're different.
They are very different. Customers might say they want certain things,
Right.
but those are often just familiar solutions.
Yeah, just what they know.
Right, and the team's job is to figure out the underlying needs that those wants represent.
Can you give me an example?
He gives the example of movie rentals back in the year 2000.
Okay.
If you'd asked customers what they wanted back then,
Yeah.
they might have said more selection or home delivery.
Right. Makes sense.
But the real need was for a more convenient and accessible way to watch movies,
Oh, I see.
which ultimately led to streaming services.
Wow, that's a really good example.
It's about thinking beyond those incremental improvements and finding truly innovative solutions that address the root of the problem.
I like it. So we're not just talking about making things a little bit better.
No.
We're talking about really changing the game. Okay, I'm ready for the next question.
All right, question number four is all about learning.
Learning.
He asks, what do you need to learn?
Okay.
This gets the team to identify their assumptions.
The things they believe to be true.
The things they believe to be true about the customer, the problem, potential solutions,
Yeah.
and prioritize them.
So it's like figuring out where to start
It's like creating a roadmap for your research.
and experimentation.
And he really stresses the importance of testing those assumptions through rigorous experimentation.
Even if it means potential failure.
Even if it means facing potential failure. But remember how Murray defines failure?
Yeah, it's not really failure.
It's an experiment that yields no usable data.
Not one that just doesn't go as planned.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So even negative results can be valuable.
As long as you learn something.
If you learn something.
Okay, so failure is not so scary anymore.
No, it's an opportunity.
I like that.
And he actually encourages teams to tackle their riskiest assumptions first.
Really?
Why? Even though it feels kind of counterintuitive?
Yeah, you'd think you'd want to start with the easy stuff.
He argues that delaying those tests just increases the risk of wasting time and resources on a solution that's ultimately flawed.
Oh, that makes sense.
He also provides some helpful prompts for identifying those risky assumptions.
To give an example.
Like, what behaviors, if not present, will prevent you from scaling your prototype? And what technical debt will you have to revisit during this process?
So you're proactively looking for potential problems.
Exactly.
Okay, what's the next question?
Question 9 naturally follows from that. How will you test those assumptions?
So this is about the actual experimentation.
This encourages teams to think about experimentation, data collection.
You're turning those assumptions into testable hypotheses.
Exactly. And he stresses the importance of designing experiments that are specifically tailored to test those risky assumptions.
Okay.
Using low-fidelity prototypes to gather feedback quickly.
So you're not building the perfect product right away.
Not yet. You're testing the core assumptions first.
Makes sense.
And he emphasizes being bold in those experiments.
Bold.
The goal is to create a wow moment for the customer.
Oh, I see.
Something that really disrupts their expectations and gets a clear response.
You're not just trying to confirm what you think you know.
No.
You're looking to be surprised.
And challenged.
That's really cool.
And he provides a helpful framework for structuring those experiments.
Using hypotheses.
Using hypotheses, something like, if we do X, the customer will do Y for reason Z.
Okay, I like that. It's really clear.
This helps ensure that the experiment is focused and the team is clear on what they're trying to learn.
And of course, there are no failed experiments.
As long as they generate usable data.
It's all about that learning mindset.
Question 10. Once the team has tested their riskiest assumptions
and gathered some feedback,
Murray asks, what have you learned?
So this is the time for reflection.
This prompts the team to think about their findings and consider how their beliefs have evolved.
You're looking at how your thinking has changed.
Yeah, it's not just about summarizing the data. It's about challenging assumptions, identifying patterns, and developing a deeper understanding of the customer and the problem.
It's like you're taking a step back to process everything.
Murray also encourages teams to document their learnings in a visual format.
Oh, like a chart or something.
Yeah, using tools like customer journey maps or the Lean Canvas.
That's a great way to make those learnings more shareable.
Exactly. And he emphasizes telling a compelling story with the data.
Not just a bunch of numbers.
Not just a dry list of facts and figures.
See, the storytelling.
It's so much more engaging.
For sure.
Question 11 builds on that.
Okay.
It's how have your beliefs around customer, problem, and theory of value changed?
So you're tracking how your thinking has evolved.
Throughout the whole process.
All right.
And Murray wants teams to actually explain the why behind those changes.
Oh, interesting. So you really have to think it through.
This helps ensure that they're really internalizing the learnings and not just going through the motions.
I see.
He also suggests documenting this whole evolution of thinking.
Oh, wow, that's cool.
Creating a timeline that highlights key insights and decision points.
That's a great way to keep everyone on the same page.
Question 12 brings the focus back to the solution.
Okay.
Murray asks, what does this mean for your solution?
So now you're thinking about how to apply what you've learned.
You're considering how your evolving understanding of the customer and the problem should shape your approach to developing a solution.
It's like making sure the solution is grounded in reality.
Exactly. And it's not about jumping to specific solutions too early.
Right.
It's about making sure the solution addresses the root cause of the problem.
And meets the customer's real needs.
He also encourages teams to explore different solution options.
Oh, so you're not limiting yourself.
Yeah, using brainstorming techniques to generate a wide range of possibilities. And of course, he stresses the importance of considering the feasibility and viability of those solutions.
So you're balancing creativity with practicality.
Exactly. All right, on to question 13. What are your next steps?
So now we're talking about action.
This helps the team develop a plan for moving forward, outlining those specific experiments, prototypes, research activities.
Turning insights into action.
And those next steps should be tied to the team's learnings.
So you're not just jumping around randomly.
And designed to address those risky assumptions.
Everything is connected.
He also encourages teams to prioritize those next steps based on their potential impact.
Okay.
And the level of risk involved.
Makes sense.
And he emphasizes setting clear goals.
In timeline.
Like each step, ensuring that the team is making progress.
I like that because sometimes it's easy to lose track.
It is. Question 14 addresses that head on. How will you know if you're successful?
You got to define success.
This gets the team to define those clear metrics for success.
I see. You're setting yourself up for accountability.
Exactly. And those metrics should be aligned with the customer's needs and desired outcomes.
Not just internal business goals.
He also encourages teams to track those metrics over time.
Oh, cool. Like a progress report.
Yeah. Creating a dashboard that provides a visual representation of their progress.
I like that.
All right. Ready for a few more?
Hit me.
Question 15 is all about facing challenges. What are your biggest challenges?
So you're being proactive.
This prompts the team to identify potential roadblocks and brainstorm strategies for overcoming them.
So you're already thinking about how to solve problems before they even happen.
Exactly. And those challenges could be internal or external.
Like what?
From technical limitations to organizational resistance.
Gotcha.
He encourages teams to be proactive, develop contingency plans, and seek support from their sponsors.
Or other stakeholders.
And of course, clear communication is key.
Keep everyone informed.
Of progress and potential roadblocks.
So you're not trying to hide problems, you're addressing them openly.
Exactly. Question 16 naturally follows from that. What support do you need?
So you can overcome those challenges.
This prompts the team to consider the resources, expertise, or connections they might need to achieve their goals.
I see.
It's not about creating a wish list.
It's about what's essential for success.
He encourages teams to be very specific.
In their request.
Explaining why they need each resource.
And how it will be used.
He emphasizes the importance of involving the sponsors in this process.
Yeah, to make sure the team has the support they need.
Okay, almost done. Question 17 prompts the team to reflect.
Okay.
It's, what are your key learnings so far?
Oh, so this is about taking stock of the journey.
It's about identifying those critical insights that have shaped their understanding of the customer, the problem, the solution.
It's about appreciating how far you've come.
And notice how he uses the word learnings instead of results.
Interesting.
This emphasizes the ongoing nature of the discovery process.
And the importance of continuous learning.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's not about reaching a destination.
It's about the journey.
I like that.
Now, we've covered 17 of Murray's 20 questions.
Wow.
These are just some examples.
They're all really thought-provoking.
Of how he guides teams through that whole innovation process.
It's clear that each question is designed to really spark deep thinking.
Uncover those hidden assumptions.
Guide teams towards real solutions.
Exactly. And remember, these questions aren't just about finding answers.
It's about the process.
They're about fostering that culture of curiosity.
Experimentation.
Continuous learning.
So what happens when you move beyond this question-asking phase?
When it's time to actually implement those solutions.
Well, what then?
That's where Murray's insights on embracing failure, generating insights, and scaling innovation really come into play.
Yeah.
That's where it gets real.
Yeah. How do you actually build that culture?
Where embracing failure and learning from it is encouraged.
Yeah.
That's where the sponsor is super important.
Right.
Remember how Murray talks about true failure only happening when you don't learn? That's a big mindset shift.
It is. You're not afraid to be wrong.
Yeah. It takes the pressure off needing to be right all the time.
You're focused on discovery.
You're focused on the process of discovery.
Yeah.
It creates a space where it's okay to experiment.
Try new things.
See what happens.
Even if it doesn't go as planned.
Exactly. And the sponsor plays a big role in creating that environment.
So how do they do that?
Well, first, they lead by example.
Oh, yeah.
They got to be willing to admit when they're wrong.
Oh, interesting.
Change their mind based on new information.
Okay.
And be open about their own mistakes.
It's like that saying, do as I do, not as I say.
Yeah. Actions speak louder than words.
Especially when you're trying to build trust.
And psychological safety within a team.
Okay, so beyond just being a good example.
Sponsors can also actively encourage experimentation.
Cool.
By giving resources.
Okay.
Clearing roadblocks.
Mm-hmm.
Celebrating both the successes and what we usually think of as failures.
As learning opportunities.
Exactly.
So the focus is on gaining insights.
no matter the outcome.
Okay.
And once you have that environment where people feel safe experimenting,
yeah,
then you got to get good at extracting meaning from the data you're collecting.
Oh, that makes sense, because anyone can run experiments.
Right.
But finding insights,
that's a whole other skill.
Yeah.
Remember how Murray differentiates between strong and weak insights?
Mm.
Strong ones lead to action.
While weak statements
don't really offer any direction.
Can you give me an example again?
Yeah.
Remember that story about the team that realized their product wasn't actually meeting the needs of their customer?
Oh, yeah. They had to rethink their whole approach.
Exactly. Because that negative result
yeah.
led to a powerful insight.
And a better solution.
It's not about avoiding those so-called failures.
It's about reframing them.
As chances to learn and improve.
Okay. Then what?
Well, you've got to figure out how to scale your innovation.
So taking that idea...
from a prototype to an actual product.
That's the hard part. It is a whole different ballgame.
Yeah.
But Murray has some great advice.
Oh, good.
He talks about viability, feasibility, and market fit.
Right.
And those tools we mentioned.
Lean Canvas.
Business Model Canvas.
To test assumptions.
He also points out that bringing in new people during scaling can be tricky.
Oh, yeah, like new experts.
Apprentices.
It can disrupt the team dynamic.
Remember that anecdote about the team that had conflict?
Yeah, communication is key.
And strong support from the sponsor.
To navigate those challenges.
And then there's that big decision of transferring ownership.
To another team.
For the final stages.
That's a tough one.
It is. Murray has some advice on how to make that transition smooth.
With clear expectations.
For everyone involved.
Okay.
But it's not just about finishing the project.
There's more.
It's about setting the team up for success in the future.
I see.
Murray actually recommends keeping those teams together.
So they can keep working together.
To capitalize on their strengths.
Utilize that trust they've built.
Correct.
So they can keep innovating.
He even suggests involving the team in choosing their next project.
Oh, that's a great idea.
To align their interests with the organization's goals.
It keeps them engaged.
It's all about continuous learning and improvement.
For both the individuals and the team.
And that's what I love about this book.
It's not just about innovation. It's about leadership.
Empowering people.
Building a culture where everyone thrives.
Exactly. So as we wrap up our deep dive,
yeah.
let's think about how we can apply these ideas to our own work.
How can we unlock the potential in others?
By asking instead of telling.
Create those safe spaces for people to experiment and learn.
That's what we hope you take away from this.
Thanks for joining us.